listening to Retakes Podcast, your personally hand-picked self-help section for industry animators. I am your host, Danny Abram, and I'm an animator in the UK, working in children's TV, feature films, and indie projects, and I'm here to share with you the hows, the whys, and the actions we can all take to make it in this crazy industry. Hi, everybody! Welcome back to another week. Welcome back to another Monday. Welcome back to another episode of Retakes Podcast. How are you? Have you had a good week? I'm recording in a death trap. The other day I was up here the other day just reading books and playing in my attic, as I am wont to do, and there was an absolutely gigantic big house spider. You know those house spiders that come out this time of year? And I just screamed. And it ran away into my massive collection of Polly Pockets, which for some reason I've displayed, collected, like, on the floor. Like, I've done, like, a cascading waterfall of Polly Pocket compacts. It's beautiful. But, in hindsight, stupid, because now there is a gigantic house spider somewhere in my attic, hiding amongst my favourite things in the world, my vintage Polly Pockets. So I might have to make this really quick. Or, if I just start screaming, you know what's happened. Massive. Oof. I was reading a book, obviously, called How to Make People Like You in 90 Seconds or Less by Nicholas Boothman. And it's a bit of an old book. Well, I say old. It was like 2008 it was published. I just Googled that. I didn't know. It was just on my app. So I was like, yep, that sounds like a bit of me. How to Make People Like You. Yes, please. And he's got some really cool points. And what I love about this, when I come across a book that has a really cool point, is that I can remember that it is backed up somewhere else in something else I've done. So this has definitely come up for me in mindset coaching, which was something I undertook last year. And I really thought, like, ooh, everyone needs to know this. It's so simple, but I didn't know it until I know it. Do you know what I mean? Just gonna start with a disclaimer though, like I think I should do on every single episode, because to be honest, when I publish them, I go through this like dark night of the soul where I'm like, who am I? Who is Danny Abram? Why should anyone give a shit what she says? And crucially, why should they believe me or why should they listen? I panic that I might have said something that will make someone else feel alienated or alone, and that is the very opposite thing that I always wanted this podcast to be about. I don't want you to feel alone. I don't want you to feel like you're not seen. And so with this one, I'm going to talk about attitude. I don't want you to think that I am chronically positive. I hate chronic positivity, toxic positivity, call it what you want. Sometimes you cannot dig yourself out of the pit. You just have to wait it out. And especially like when I think back to before the pandemic, when I was really sad, I would not have been able to take this information in. I would not have been able to believe that this is something that I could do. So I understand when you're in that place where you just think, shut up, you don't get it. You don't know me, you don't get it. How could you say happy thoughts create happy attitude? Shut up, Danny. I know, I get it. I get it. I hated it too. But one thing I will say about that as well is that when I was really depressed and had the worst of my anxiety, and as you know, I've said before, I've been on anxiety medication since 2009, so I am near, if I feel like a lifer at this point, I think I know how you feel. I will say that even if you're there, you still have to function as a member of society. And that is like a cruelty almost, but it's also just a fact. Like when I was the saddest, I actually had to work the hardest just because of some personal circumstances. So if you are in a bad place, this might not land with you, but maybe you can come back to it when you're feeling a little bit more like you've just climbed up to the next rung of the ladder out of the pit. Or it might help you just, I don't know, see that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, your current tunnel. It's always there for you to come back on when you need it. It blew my mind anyway, and it's something that's gone in and I hope will not disappear. The thing he was talking about in his book that I loved was this thing called the really useful attitude. He states that we can choose our attitude in any moment. Well, not in any moment. He does say this in any moment, and I know I'm getting tongue-tied again. Oh, I hate this about myself. Because I always think, like, not every moment. But he says if you can choose your attitude in any moment, then you're going to put yourself in the very best possible position to nail whatever it is that you're trying to nail. I'm going to use a couple of examples as we go through, so this isn't just waffle. And it is something that has come up with my mindset coaching as well. Like, basically, I spent $2,500 for a really posh lady to tell me that it's all attitude. So I've just saved you $2,500. Obviously, there's a lot more to it than that. Obviously, I'd done a lot of counselling first. Obviously, I understood a bigger, wider picture. And obviously, I was very ready to have my attitude changed. I was so open and willing to change my attitude. Otherwise, I wouldn't have gone to someone and paid a load of money for them to help me do that. So what is a really useful attitude, you might be thinking? Nicholas Boothman says that that is knowing what you want and developing the best attitude to get it. I can see a few moments in my career where that has happened to me and I have been able to put myself in that, like, put myself in those shoes of power and do exactly, like, when I look back, I did everything right and it worked out perfectly, and it's so interesting. Once upon a time, I really wanted to up my game in my animation. Like, obviously, we all want to always up our games in animation, right? We are always developing our skills, and we're always trying to move forward, and we're always trying to climb the ladder. The skills ladder? I'm not sure that there is an actual, like, level ladder. I'm sure once you get to my age, and you've been a senior for a solid 10 years... There's almost, there's like, how many job titles are there left, though? How high can you climb, really? So it was, for me, it was all about, like, skills and style. And particularly at the time, I really wanted to get some experience hand-drawn animating. So if you don't know my backstory, I started in animation as a CG animator, and I have come through the ranks, picked up a little bit of compositing on the way, picked up some rigging on the way, and I am now primarily and mostly a 2D, like, cutout or rigged animator, I would say. So I work in Toon Boom nearly exclusively. Except for I've got a Maya job starting next week, so those old skills never go away. Anyway, I was sitting on my hands one day thinking, where is my career going to go? What am I going to be? Oh my god, I'm no one. Well, as I usually do, probably on a Sunday. And I had an email through my website that was from a producer that I had never heard of, saying, hi Danny, I've got your contact details from someone else. They recommended that I get in touch with you. Can you phone me back? It's funny when I look back and I realise, like, what steps I made, because I just had a feeling. So I googled this lady's name and nothing came up. Or something did come up, but it was like live action TV. And I was like, don't know who that is. She'd mentioned that she's working with a studio. I googled the studio. It was a live action studio. I was like, this doesn't really, you know, when you just get like, I don't know vibes. But just because, like, her wording was so professional, I thought I better do what she says. And isn't that interesting? I should write that down and remember that, because I just bloody followed her instructions. I'm a geriatric millennial and I will not call anyone if I can get away with it. Phone calls are my nightmare. Nope. Don't ring me. If you ring me, I'm really sorry. I'll just watch it ring while I Google your phone number, and then I'll just be like, oh no, sorry, I missed you. I'm that awful person. But she just had such authority in her words in this email that I thought, okay, lady, I'll call you tomorrow morning. And I rang her. And she told me, we've got, like, a really quick 2D project for Channel 4 on. We need a 2D hand-drawn animator really quickly. Are you available, and can you do that? Now, there have been so many times in my career where someone has said, we need something, something of a certain ilk, something of a certain style. Are you available? And I have balked at that and thought, oh no, I can't do that. That's not me. But here are three of my friends that you should contact instead, and I have passed someone else on. Now, just from her wording, and just from the way she spoke to me, and just, I don't know, just the stars aligning, maybe, I thought, okay, yeah, I can do that. And I did have this written down in my notebook as an episode that I wanted to talk about in the future, called Winging It, because this is fucking good example of absolutely winging it, just saying yes until you have to say no. And she sent me through some materials, and those materials were Quentin Blake artwork. And I near did a backflip in my living room. And the job was Channel 4 end boards for the Christmas period of clown jumping around adverts in Quentin Blake style, in 2D hand-drawn, and I nearly backflipped. I have never been so excited and so thrilled and so out of my depth and scared in my entire life. But every single step of the way where she said, can you do this? I said, yes, absolutely. With a smile on my face and a happy voice. Because I didn't want to fuck it up. I knew what the end goal was for me. The end goal for me was to get this. This was, to me, this was really big and really exciting, huge. And I was like shaking. I was so happy about it. It's Quentin freaking Blake. My grandma knows who Quentin Blake is. Do you know what I mean? I have children's book illustrator friends who I could not wait to tell. And all I had to do was just not fuck it up and develop this really useful attitude and just make myself the exact person that this lady needed to solve her problem, which was she needed some animation really quick. I had to stay up all night practicing drawing. I did a test. I built an entire clown rig in a software that I do know, so that then I could use it to do some poses and then practice hand-drawn animation around it. That is how useful I made myself. That might sound like overwork, or you might think if that ever came to you, you might not do that. Or you might think, nah, I could do it if it was cut out, but I can't do it if it's hand-drawn. Or I could do it if it was 3D, but I can't do it if it's 2D. But there are ways that you can find that will bridge those gaps for you using the skills that you already have. And I ended up nailing it, and I ended up getting that job, and then I ended up working on the actual film itself. And that then led me to more 2D work with the same company. And it was all because instead of thinking about all the problems, or instead of thinking of all the ways that I was a square peg for that round hole, instead of thinking all the ways that I wasn't perfect and that I should push someone else onto that, I was a little bit greedy and I wanted it for myself. I wanted it so badly I made myself fit that hole. I got in that hole. Deep. So something else that Richard Boothman says in his book is that the mind and the body are part of the same system. Now, this has definitely come up for me as well in therapy, and has definitely come up for me in life coaching, and that is all around the thoughts you think create the emotions you feel, create the actions you take, create the results you get. Now, that is sort of coaching in a nutshell, really. Like, but it is all about that personal journey of you recognizing what that means for you. So for me, in that clown example, the excitement I felt at being asked in the first place was something I didn't want to let go of. And I sort of decided that what I actually wanted out of this, and that the big outcome of this, was to impress this lady. And so I just took steps back from that. I'm like, how do I impress this lady? I give her what she wants. How do I give her what she wants? I friggin' just make sure I know how to do it. I will train all night if I have to. And that gave me my, like, to-do list, basically. Another thing that I definitely recognised that I was doing was sounding really happy and excited about it. Because I genuinely was, but also I was feeling all this fear around, was I actually the right person? But if you sound happy, your body language follows. Like, if I sound happy right now, it's because I am. I'm in my happy place and I'm talking to you. And if you could see me, you would see how animated I am. Like, I'm all over the place, really. My microphone hates it. I can see my levels drop when I throw my head back, that kind of thing. I'm really excited. My voice is excited. My body's excited. If somebody met me in this moment, they would think, well, she's excited. They would think, I like Dani. I want to play with her more. I would like to spend some time with her. I would like to be in her company. And this is kind of what the whole book is about, the how to make people like you in 90 seconds. And that is all about those, like, first impressions. But back to the mind and body. If you are sounding happy, and I know when you're not happy, that's quite hard to do, but it's something that you can change in the moment. Have you ever been walking down the street, and you're in, like, the foulest mood ever, and everything sucks, and you hate everyone, and you've just been paid late by some bullshit company, and you just hate the human race, blah, 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 and you're in a funk. But then someone you know has come around the corner, and they've gone, oh, hey! And your face, like, even if you have to fake it, you go, oh, hi! and then for some reason, somehow, you're able to pull it out your ass. Like, they would never know you're in such a funk. I mean, sometimes I just tell them because, like, I'm Danny and I'm an open book most of the time. But usually, and especially if it's someone you don't know too well, you can pull it out your ass and fake it and you look fine. And you end up actually leaving that interaction way happier than when you went into it and it was just because somebody else shook you out of it and then you had to change your voice and face to match theirs. I really like noticing when that happens. This is a backwards example of that, but when I was in counselling, I would go into the room with the counsellor and we would do the pleasant hellos. I always notice the same pattern every time. Like, obviously I'm there for sad reasons, but I would come in and I'd be like, "Hi, Vicky." And she'd be like, "Hi, Danny. How are you?" And I'm like, "Oh, I love your shoes. Yeah, thanks very much. Like, blah, blah, pink, pink. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, good weekend. Yep, great. Thanks." And we'd sit down in the chairs. And then she said, "So how have you been?" And I would go, "Not good, actually, Vicky." And my face would drop, my eyebrows would drop, my tone would drop, my shoulders would drop. Everything about me physically changed. I'd stop faking it. And then I was like, "Oh my God, like, I'm not doing well, actually." And then I would see it mirror in her immediately. She would drop her eyebrows. She would put the sad face on. She would soften her voice for me. And she would say, "Tell me about it." And if you can do the opposite way, when you see people, when you bump into an old friend or you see someone in the street, even just, "Oh my God, I love my postman where we live." Every time he knocks on, like, he started knocking on my window now instead of the door, because, like, he gets my attention before I get to the door. Because it's a long story, but Ian's normally got some toy or another being delivered from eBay. It's usually a parcel. And so he'll knock on my window and I'm like, "Hi!" Like, we have a nice interaction. Seeing the postman makes me happy. His face makes me happy. I'm sure my face makes him happy. That's that's a cute small example, but, like, another way that, like, the mind and the body are the same system, and also we're part of the system of the human community as well. Like, we can bump each other up. Oh, it's just magic when you notice it. I really, really put a lot into this, because as a loner, well, I won't say a loner, but, like, as a solo worker from home, there is not much opportunity for human interaction. So I tend to put all my energy into those, like, group meetings at work, like the Skype calls or the Zoom calls or whatever. Or I'll save it for the postman if that's all that's on my menu for the day. But it makes me happy as well. It just gives me that little boost. If you look for opportunities to be happy, so I'm talking about me looking forward to seeing my postman, you will find more instances that make you happy. Like, they kind of multiply. If I'm wired for happiness, or if I'm wired for connection, or if I'm wired for positivity, I will see more positivity. And this wasn't in the Nicholas Boothman book, but I've made the link myself reading it. Through, I think it was mindset coaching, I learned about a thing called the reticular activating system. And this is exactly what that is about. So when you are seeking happiness, or if you're looking for happiness, more happiness happens to you. And that is because the reticular activating system is sort of your guidance system, I'm going to say, like, almost like your brain's sat-nav, nearly. It will seek out more of the same, if I'm making that make sense. And if you wanted some science, I googled it. Because I was like, "What am I talking about? Like, I know about this reticular activating system, but I don't know what it is when I need to describe what it is." The reticular activating system is a network of neurons located in the brainstem that project anteriorly to the hypothalamus to mediate behaviour, as well as both posteriorly to the thalamus and directly to the cortex for activation of awake, desynchronised cortical EEG patterns. Fucking hell. Right. Maybe I'll cut that out, because what? How do I make that make sense? That's a lot. Anyway, so what my life coach told me was, in really simple terms, if you are focusing on something, you will see more of that thing. And she used a example of a mint green car. If suddenly, for some reason, I am obsessed with mint green cars, and I really want a mint green car, and I've been saving up to get a mint green car, you will suddenly spot them out in the street. You'll be like, oh my God, a Nissan Figaro in mint green. Oh my God, Ian, did you see that? Like, you will see it more and more because your reticular activating system is filtering out everything else and is focusing on that thing that you want. Now, in terms of mindset, this happens with positivity. And I wouldn't have listened to this when I was super depressed. But I can feel it happening to me right now. The more I think happy things about how good my life is, the better my life gets, the more I see. But it's really interesting, and if you want to know more, definitely look that up, because that wasn't in this book, but that was definitely what they were getting at, I'm sure of it. Now, the opposite of a really useful attitude, and this is what Nicholas Buberman talks about, is a really useless attitude. And it's so easy to fall into the really useless side of your thoughts. I know this. And it can be something so small as like body language. It can be so small as just a facial expression. And it can be as small as just some thoughts. But do you remember when I said that your thoughts create your emotions and your emotions create your actions? It's kind of that. Like if I am stuck in everything sucks and I hate the world mode, which I've been there, and you know, maybe that is on some sort of cycle as well, like we were talking about last week, then the worse the world looks and the worse the world feels and the worse my actions are and the worse my life gets. Now, you didn't do anything wrong if you're there. You didn't make a mistake. You're not stupid. We're just wired that way. This wasn't in the book either, but like that is something I learned in counselling, is that you are wired for the negative because it is an early survival mechanism. So if you notice that the stove is hot when you touch it, you get burned, so you don't do it again, you are wired for those negative circumstances. You are wired for those negative scenarios. They'll keep you alive if you avoid them. And it's the same with like negative thoughts, negative anything. Negative experiences in childhood will still be negative now. We are wired that way. And so it's not your fault if you're down there with them. But the really useful attitude would be to try and change your voice or your facial expressions or your body language as soon as you can, as soon as you notice yourself. Because then you can start to climb the ladder back out of it. Something else we did in life coaching as well, which was like invaluable. She had like this long list of all the human emotions, all the way down from like maybe the last word on the list is like despair. And then at the top, it might be like elation or joy. And so if you can just work on wherever you are on the ladder, you want to be aiming for like two or three emotions higher than that. And that will get you out of your funk. And the higher you are on the ladder, generally, the easier it is to stay higher and get higher, but the lower you are on the ladder, the harder it is, and you might need like outside intervention. It's so interesting. I so recommend looking into that or getting someone to help you with that. How can we apply any of this? Because that's all I care about. I care about learning about it. I'm like, that's sweet and cool and stuff, but how does that help my career and me and what I want? Well, have you got an interview coming up? Are you currently out of work but you're looking for work? Have you got a university lecture, a talk, or something cool like that? Well, if you have, good news is you can use this to literally choose the outcome you want. A good example of this for me was the beginning of this year. I haven't had a job interview for ages, right? It's been a while. And I had an interview with A Productions to go on the Elmo show just because it was like a brand new team and why not? Like I should be interviewed every now and again. Rude not to. And I didn't get nervous. And here's why. I thought about what I wanted these people to feel after the interview and not what was happening for me. So I thought to myself, I wanted Vanessa and Nick to leave that meeting thinking that was great. God, that was fun. That was a lovely half an hour. And I put all my focus onto that. Really simple things I could do to make that happen was to put myself in like a happy frame of mind. Yes, I was still nervous because of course I was still nervous. I am Mrs. Nervous. But my focus was not on me and what all the things that could go wrong or what if I don't have an answer to what they say. Like, what if they ask me a question and I don't have an answer? It didn't matter. If they asked me a question I didn't have the answer to, I would try my best to make them feel good no matter what. I was thinking in terms of, like, how will they feel? And if you don't have, just in case you're listening to this and you're panicking, there's no such thing as no answer. If somebody asked me a question and I didn't know the answer, I would just say, oh, good question. Let me get back to you on that because I don't have an answer lined up. How simple is that? And how friendly and happy did that sound? And because of the friendly, happy tone, how reasonable is it? So don't go into interviews in a passive way. Like, you are allowed to decide this interview is going to go really well. And I am going to make that interviewer feel good. I'm going to make them laugh. I'm going to make them think I'm fun and easy to work with. And I'm going to answer all their questions to the best of my ability. And we're all going to have a good time. Now, in this Elmo interview, I'm not kidding, my Zoom crashed 3 times. And on the inside, I could have had an absolute meltdown. I could have burst into tears. Like, maybe past Annie would have burst into tears or something, or just would have felt really small and awful. But I just kept reconnecting and thinking about Nick and Vanessa and how they are going to feel. They're going to want me to join back in immediately and crack straight on. They are busy people. They've got half an hour. They need me to just come back in and be like, whoop, so sorry about that. Won't happen again, even if it did. And I didn't have those panics because I decided my attitude was going to be really useful and I was going to make this fun anyway. This might be outside your comfort zone, and that is a good thing. Sometimes it's a good thing to force yourself outside of your comfort zone, even if you're not feeling well. On the other side of it, you will feel amazing, just like bumping into a friend in the street and it gives you that little human boost. You will feel good after. I was bouncing around my house after that interview, even though on paper it went really badly. You could call 3 crashes really badly. But it was fun. It was fun for me and it was fun for them. And we talked about my leopard print Lucien yaks. That's what I remember. That's what I remember. And I am sure that's what Vanessa remembers. I'm sure they don't remember that it crashed 3 times. And I got the job. So, you know, did it work? Was it just that? I don't know. But it helped. Meaningful connections work both ways. So this book's all about how to get people to like you in 90 seconds. Or less, but it works both ways. It's not just you tricking the other person into feeling that you're better than you are. Like, you're getting a boost and an interaction and a meaningful connection with them as well. And that's going to make you feel good. And that's going to keep making you feel good long after the interaction's ended. It's such a good book. It's really good. I totally recommend it if you want to. It's got loads more tips about conversation styles and conversation starters and how to listen and how to be an active listener and how to keep a conversation rolling if it's not going as smoothly as you want or whatever, like asking open questions, that kind of thing. It's a really, really good book and I so enjoyed it. But my takeaways were just this really useful attitude was, oof, mwah, I'm going to use it. I'm going to nick it. I hope you do too. Sorry, this is a bit of a fast one. The spider didn't come and get me, which is a thank God. But I'll leave it at there. And if you have any ideas or any thoughts, please, 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 please let me know. I would love to hear whether you've ever noticed your reticular activating system or whether you've ever noticed a moment where you thought, oh, I'm just going to be really useful instead of the opposite, and whether it worked out for you. I would love to know. So email me at retakespod@gmail.com and find me on Twitter and Instagram at retakespod. And I will see you next week. Happy animating, everybody. Bye. Thank you.